Yeah, I learned a lot. I learned that guys can actually have tramp stamps, too. So.
Huh? Are you serious?
What is that all about, Larry? I don't. First of all, how do you discover that?
Ladies and gentlemen, we know.
Oh, my God, we don't have an investigation plan for this weekend. Oh, my God, what am I going to do? It's like, you know, get a life. That's what we're going to do.
Let me just pretend for a minute that I'm one of those people. Now, imagine me just staring off into blank space, right?
Larry, we're going to get in so much trouble.
Think of all the best parts of some of the different movies that are out there, and then just imagine this.
You know what? Let's just keep moving forward at light speed, and whoever keeps up, whoever doesn't, screw them.
And now, ladies and gentlemen, Banal of America Audio, with your host, Tim Banal.
What is going on, my friends? This is Tim Banal of BanalofAmerica.com with another edition of BOA Audio Season 6. Got a lot to talk about here at the beginning of the show, so let's just get into the madness. First of all, I want to give a big thanks, of course, to our buddy Pete Diggins for providing the theme music to this installment of the program. Check out Pete's website, www.orophonic.com. AuroPhonic.com. Now, I want to address some unfortunate news, and that is, of course, the passing of a couple of big names here in the world of the paranormal over the last few days. First of all, this past weekend, the world of abduction research lost its veritable founder in the legendary Bud Hopkins. I was really honored to have the opportunity to speak with Bud 2 years ago for BOA Audio Season 4. It was a thrilling conversation for me. I really loved his book, Art, Life, and UFOs, and thoroughly enjoyed the conversation. He was a tremendous force in the world of not just UFO studies, but also the world of the paranormal at large, and he will be greatly, greatly missed. And his family should be tremendously proud of what he accomplished. He changed the world, my friends. Bud Hopkins, a true esoteric icon. My heart and thoughts and prayers go out to his friends and family. Additionally, I would be remiss if I did not remember another person that passed away this past week, and that was Stuart Miller from the UK. He was the man behind Alien Worlds, as well as UFO Review. Unfortunately, his passing just slipped right past me. Happened towards the end of this past week, and I hadn't really heard about it until the weekend. Stuart Miller did some yeoman's work in the world of ufology and the paranormal, getting out tons and tons of news stories day after day with UFO Review. And what many people probably don't realize is that Stuart Miller was one of the very early supporters of BOA and BOA Audio. He was really a big help in getting the word out about this program when we were first starting out, and I always remembered that. And when I read the news about Stuart Miller passing away, I was just really saddened by it. I was really wishing that I had been in better touch with him in the last few years. So, much like with Bud Hopkins, my heart and thoughts and prayers go out to the friends and family of Stuart Miller. He will be greatly missed as well. Now let's try and turn these frowns upside down and get into the business here of this week's installment of BOA Audio. Our guests are mainstays of the program, Larry Flaxman and Marie Jones, and they are returning for their annual paranormal jam session. And in this year's installment, we're going to cover their new book, The Trinity Secret, and all the weirdness surrounding the number 3. From there, then, we're going to go completely off the page, and it just turns into a free-flowing conversation in a huge way as we get into their thoughts and feelings about the problems and annoyances surrounding the world of ghost hunting and the paranormal community as a whole. Really, it was almost difficult for me to write the trademark BOA recap on the BOA show page for this one, because this thing just sort of flowed. There weren't really questions or anything. It was just sort of a natural conversation, and we touch on a whole bunch of stuff. We turn around and go back to stuff. We really just sort of let the conversation flow wherever it wants to go. Marie and Larry have been on the program so many times by now that, to be quite honest, and I think you may notice this once you start listening to the episode, it actually kind of was weird for us just to sort of get going on the program, because we'd spent the first 10 minutes goofing around and talking, and then it was like, well, we better start taping this show so people can start listening to this. So it was like all of a sudden we kind of all got stiff and realized we were being listened to, if you will. But that melts away as we get going into the conversation, and then it's right back to where we were when we all got on the phone at the beginning, and it's just unbelievable. It really is quite the conversation with Marie and Larry. It's no holds barred from them and me as well as we get into stuff that gets on our nerves here in the world of esoterica. Altogether, really, it is a tremendously raw edition of the program, which takes you to the proverbial hotel bar as we keep it real with Marie Jones and Larry Flaxman. I know that's a figure of speech, but trust me, my friends, this one really is as real can get. This is what a true conversation amongst the three of us sounds like, and it is all over the place, but incredibly enlightening as to how these tremendous researchers of the paranormal feel about their place in the community and the community as a whole. Given that this is a dual guest episode, we're going to do an end run here around the bios for the two guests. Of course, Marie Jones is the author of Science, and Larry is the founder of Our Past, the Arkansas Paranormal and Anomalous Studies team. Collectively, they've written a number of books, including 1111, The Time Prompt Phenomenon, The Deja Vu Enigma, The Resonance Key, and their latest book, The Trinity Secret. Collectively, they are known as the Para Explorers, and you can find out more from them at their website, www.paraexplorers.com. Check it out. So with all that said, let's get down to business and rock and roll. This interview was recorded on June 20th, 2011. Larry Flaxman and Marie Jones talking about the Trinity Secret and their take on the world of paranormal studies on BOA Audio Season 6. Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to another edition of BOA Audio Season 6, and it is our annual tradition here on the program, welcoming back two of our good buddies here on the program. I could spend a large portion of the interview just talking about how fantastic they are. Marie, I believe this is her fourth time on the show, Marie Jones, and folks, she is absolutely amazing, and I hate to use this qualifier, but I'm going to say it because it bears saying. Genre for genre, she is the very best of the best of the women in the world of esoterica. She is just so sharp and doing such amazing research, and I put her over all the time to people, always, and I'm always recommending her stuff. So she's back on the show. She's blushing like crazy, I'm sure, right now, and Larry's probably trying to stifle a giggle.
No, I'm just trying to figure out how much I owe you later.
And then there's Larry. No, I'm just kidding. Larry Flaxman.
Oh, boy.
I can honestly say I have more fun talking to Larry every year than just about any guest we have on the show. I have so many laughs, and it's not just that he's so funny and sharp and quick. It's that he understands this genre in a way that a lot of people don't, and he doesn't take it too seriously, but at the same time, he takes it very seriously with regards to trying to get to the bottom of what's behind all this. So, you know, Larry, you know, he comes off as he's got the banal vibe. I've heard people say that you know, I sort of come off as the everyman. Larry does too, and that's why I love talking to him so much. So, you know, those are my deeply personal introductions for my good friends. What is going on over there, Larry? What are you, washing your dishes or something?
Larry, what are you doing?
No, that's not me. I'm sitting here in my chair. I'm not doing anything.
Uh-oh. We have a spirit on the line.
No, I'm not doing anything.
Larry, put the pork rinds down, and let's get down to business here. Oh, God.
No, there has been no pork rinds.
You settling in your chair. You must, I don't know what's going on. But anyway, those are my introductions for my good buddies here. Marie, welcome back to the show. Larry, welcome back also. Love talking to you guys. Can't wait to get down to business.
Thank you. Good to be back.
Yeah, thanks. Thanks for having us, Tim.
Oh, my pleasure. Please, you kidding me? As soon as I sat down to start scheduling the interviews here for the summer, I was like, I got to get these guys on the line. Now, you got a new book, came out this spring. It's called The Trinity. I guess, you know, that sort of fills in the blanks of what you guys have been up to in the past year. But before we get into The Trinity, you know, it's been a year. How have you been and what's been going on? And
brother.
Yeah, I know. Well, we'll start with you, Marie, since you...
Oh, gee, thanks.
Since you started there.
Burnout, exhausted, working my ass off. What else do you expect from me, Tim?
Absolutely, yeah.
My finger's in about 8,000 different pies.
Well, that's...
Same old.
What's that?
Same old thing.
There you go. All right. She's teasing us here with other exciting things that we're going to get into here over the course of the show. How about you, Larry? What's been going on with you, buddy? How you been?
Good. About the same. It seems like Marie and I always have some huge project that we're working on, and since last time we've talked to you, that's definitely no different. So we've been staying really busy. Very, very, very busy. And it's been so damn hot. Is it hot where you are?
It's pretty hot, yeah. It's about, yeah, it was like in the 90s today.
Yeah. I'm in Southern California.
Yeah,
beautiful.
Marie's got it, like, made warm. Where she's at, but yeah, it's like super freaking hot here.
Yeah, it's hot. But Marie lives in the biodome that is San Diego.
The perfect weather.
Yeah, until Christmas time, and then it's like, you know, Christmas lights on palm trees, and you want to cry.
That is true. Every now and then we get a little bit of wind, but yeah.
So, all right. So, so the what you've been up to, I'm sure we're going to end up getting into here. So how about the Trinity? Let's talk about this. Now, in the past, we've had you on the show. Sometimes, you know, you attribute the origins of the book to the publisher's idea, or other times it comes from you guys, and we've explored that in a number of ways here on the show. So what's the story behind The Trinity? How did this come about this time around?
This was our idea. We had finished the Deja Vu Enigma, and we decided to offer New Page. We wanted a two-book deal. We wanted to lock in two books, mm-hmm. and so The Trinity Secret was something that we kind of got into a little bit in 11-11.
Oh, yeah.
The number three. And we kept thinking, you know, we really need to go back to that. There's a lot of stuff that we just don't have time now to cover, but there's really something interesting about this number three. So when the opportunity came after Deja Vu Enigma came out, we thought, all right, let's go ahead and do this. So it was our idea. You know, it's funny because I was just thinking about this before. It's almost like every other book is our idea or the publisher's idea.
Yeah.
We have one that we're working on now that the publisher suggested to us. So
nice. All right. So yeah, I can see how this would come organically from 11-11, because 11-11, as we talked about on the show when you guys were on to cover that book, you know, covers not just obviously 11-11, but all the different numbers and permutations. Fantastic book. I love that book because I learned so much in there. You know, about numbers, and it's exciting that you sort of just then expand it into this new book.
Yes, I mean, we didn't have enough room to really get into one particular number. So I guess we tucked in the back of our minds that we might want to revisit later the number three specifically, just because it is so pervasive. I mean, it's everywhere.
Yeah. Well, what do you make of that? Because that's obviously sort of the, like you said, was kind of what kickstarted a lot of this. Mm-hmm. We'll go to Larry here on this
Larry.
One. Larry, what you know, what makes the Trinity, or as I like to call it, based on the back of your book, the Triune?
Triune.
Yeah. So
is that going to be your favorite word now?
Triune.
I'm going to try and work it in the conversations now.
Oh,
but
let's do that. Yeah.
What you know? What makes the Triune so damn popular?
It's such a cool word, you know? How many other words could you possibly have that sounds as cool as that?
Oh,
yeah. What makes it so popular? The thing that makes it so popular is its pervasiveness. It seems like everything revolves around threes. It seems like there's the triadic
nature of reality itself revolves around three. And think about the three little bears. Let's see, what are some other good examples of threes that we're all familiar with? Beyond
Manny,
what's in the
Moe
book, the
Jack.
Father, Son, and the Holy Ghost. There's what, Marie?
Manny, Moe, and Jack.
yeah,
no, Curly, what is it?
Larry,
Moe, and Curly.
Curly and Moe. Larry, Curly, and Moe. Three, it seems to be a part of everything. So, when you ask what's so significant about the triune nature, that's what it is. Everyone has some type of a story that they can relate to something happening with a three. You know, there's good, bad, and worse. Someone always has a story about, you know, something involving three.
Comes in threes, yeah. 13,
yeah, things
charm,
come in threes.
I mean, yeah.
People, right, everyone, whoever you talk to, ask them, you know, what experience have they had with something with three, and undoubtedly someone will have some type of experience that they can relate to that involves three.
Now, I'll play devil's advocate here just because, you know, but maybe that's just because it's a simple number and it evolved that way from, like, cave people and stuff like that. Like, I watch Idiot Abroad. I don't know if you guys have ever seen that, but...
No.
Oh, it's a very funny show. But anyway, like the host, he's kind of a moron, let's say. Was an idiot. This show's an Idiot Abroad. And he said at some point, because he was visiting like this tribe in Africa, and he was like, you know, people this simple, they really only need to know, they only need to be able to count up to three. Because, you know, once, it's
right.
Just,
after
you know.
After three, it's just many. It was one, two, three, and many.
Right, right.
I know what you're saying.
Maybe that's ingrained in us, though.
It goes way beyond that, because we are a species that lives with duality.
Mm-hmm.
Dark, light, good, evil, day, night, you know, opposites. And so the number three is the unifier of opposites, and that is why it's widely recognized in every religion, in every culture's mythology, in their creation stories, their origin myths. They revere the number three. If you look at the yin-yang symbol, it's a perfect example. You've got the two dualities, but they're encompassed in one circle, and that circle itself is like the third unifying element. So three has long been considered the perfect number. And yeah, again, it's a very simple concept, but it's also very profound, and it was one that was recognized by, you know, most of the real wise sages throughout the years.
Interesting. Okay, yeah. So this reverence of the Trinity goes back even beyond probably, well, certainly, I'm sure, the, you know, the
way back.
The religious trappings,
yeah,
of the Holy Trinity.
Sure, yeah. I mean, the Catholics, you know, they borrowed from paganism straight on through.
Yeah.
I mean, most traditional religions did. But the three was, yeah, it was probably a very primitive concept as well. You know, birth, life, death. They would look around at the cycles of nature, and they would see that it sort of had a threefold nature to it.
Yeah. Very interesting. Yeah, yeah. Well, that's the thing, too. You talk about that in the book, that it's not just this, like, man-made concept, the importance and sort of the pervasiveness of the three. It happens around us whether we want it to or not, whether we,
right,
you know, whether we conceive of it or not.
Yeah, I don't think it was forced. Where, like, the number seven, I think, is a human-driven popular number.
Yeah.
And in other words, there's no real natural or organic reason why the number seven should be important, except that somebody decided it was a lucky number and it just sort of took.
Mm-hmm.
But with the number three, it was something primitive people could actually see. And it represented creation itself, how the process worked, the three levels of creation. We have three different brains. We've got three levels of consciousness. You know, it goes all the way through into science, mythology, religion, philosophy, genetics.
Pretty much everything.
Yeah, yeah.
Marie's spot on. I mean, you know, going back to your question, too, you never hear about people having experiences with twos. You know, you never hear anyone having some type of a significant event in their life that two, it revolves around twos or fives or sixes or sevens. You know, it's always... Three is definitely the most prevalent and the most ingrained into who we are. I mean, most people, like I said before, when you ask them about experiences with numbers, you know, three undoubtedly is going to be one of the most popular ones.
or something will have happened to them three times. I mean, Larry mentioned before, you know, fairy tales and folklore, even our human language, is embedded with threes. And there's a reason why there's three bears, three little pigs, three kittens, three billy goats, three wishes, three challenges, three obstacles, because it, subconsciously, that symbol is understood to be the progress towards perfection. Just, you know, again, it unifies duality. So if you have two little pigs, it's not going to be as effective. You need that third little pig that brings together the resourcefulness, the wisdom, the strength, the courage of the other two combined in order to finally reach perfection and overcome the obstacle. And that is pervasive, again, in our storytelling, where you have three-act structure, beginning, middle, end. You know, the idea of the hero's journey, where you have initiation, challenge, culmination. It's just everywhere. And I think we relate to that. In the telling the stories of our own lives, we kind of understand our lives have three parts to them.
Yeah, yeah. Now, I'm hesitant to get into the quote-unquote secret of the book, but I have a feeling that having read aspects of that in the book, I was surprised sort of the path he went down in a way.
Yeah, so are we.
Definitely.
Seriously. I mean, Larry and I were like, whoa, you know, this is really different for us, but it felt right. You know, we're trying to branch out into a lot of different directions. And it just, it, again, it was kind of organic. We started out with numbers, and then we got into the symbolism of that number. And then you find out how incredibly profound and simple it is. And it pretty much describes the act of, or the process of creation itself. And I really think that the Roman Catholics understood that when they adopted their version of the Trinity, the Father, Son, and Holy Spirit. I think they just changed the language around a little bit, but it's the same process.
The really interesting thing to me when we were writing the book, too, was the amount of other religions that have also adopted some type of ideology involving the number three. I mean, that, you know, my background is I'm Jewish, right? So I didn't think there was anything in my religious background that involved the number three. I thought, you know, the Trinity is strictly a Catholic type concept. Boy, was I wrong. I mean, there is, absolutely. There's a lot of writing about the number three in the Jewish Kabbalah, which I had absolutely no idea about. But, you know, as we did the research for the book and we started to get more exposure to not only the religious implications of three, but, you know, all implications of three. I mean, it was just fascinating. And to be able to, for myself, probably the most enriching part of writing the book really was doing the research and just learning about how other religions have these same type of basic ideas about the number three. They all call it different things, but it all basically refers to the same type concept.
And what I like about you guys, and I talked about this when we did the 11-11 book, is that you really do dig into this stuff and come up with such amazing information. Like, has anyone, like before we talked about it, and like the other book was just numbers, really, and it was like, but no one's thought to go down this path as far as I knew, you know, and I'm sure in disparate areas they had. So, I mean, has three been explored to the extent that you guys have done with this book?
Hell no.
Yeah, I was going to say, I don't think so.
No, I mean, we are groundbreakers. But, I mean, we are. What we do is we take a subject matter, we compile everything we can find that's related to it.
Yeah.
You know, we pack it into one book, and we blow people's minds because nobody is willing to do that kind of research. You know, they may take one aspect of it. I have a bunch of books on the Trinity that are written from a religious perspective.
Right.
I have one from a philosophical perspective. None really take on all of the different types of symbolism that we did. So, I mean, you know, we're not bragging, but one of the reasons why we agreed to work together was to do this very thing. It's like, you know what? Nobody's making an awful lot of inroads in certain areas, so let's go do it.
Exactly. Yeah. I mean, you shouldn't feel bad and say, you know, that you're not bragging or whatever. I mean, you deserve the
hell yeah.
You know,
we
the
are
praise.
Bragging.
But I'm serious. You know, you do some amazing stuff here and stuff that a lot of people just wouldn't put the work in to do. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like the numbers book, if I tried to write that, I would have given up like halfway through, maybe a quarter
of
the way through.
You know what else, Tim, that people tell us is that they always say, I never would have made the same connections. How did you make that connection? That's brilliant. And that is what we're really good at. It's we're finding connections and links, even if, you know, the stuff that we do that's a little more paranormal oriented.
Right.
And I think it's kind of put us outside the middle of the paranormal community, if you will, because we're not just sticking to the tried and true.
Right.
We have fans, but we also have people that think that, you know, they don't know anything. They're not really involved in the paranormal. But it's like, wait a second. We are. We're just taking it to the next level that you guys can't even make the connections to.
Yeah, we're keeping it real.
Exactly.
Keeping it real. But also seeing beyond what's going on, you know, right in front of everybody's noses. You got to look a little bit further down the road.
Exactly. I'm just... That angers me to think that people in the paranormal community would say that. Those people that think that, they're playing checkers while you guys are playing chess. And that's really what's going on here with these books. So
it's really frustrating. I mean, for both of us, especially the last couple of months, I felt a real need to just get away from that entire community because they're spinning their wheels and, you know, you try to encourage them to come off that hamster wheel, and they just do not want to get off of it.
No, but Marie, if you look at it from the bigger perspective, look at all the problems that are in the community as a whole, and look how many times that, you know, that there's been people that have brought that to the public eye, and how many times has that actually changed? It hasn't. I mean,
no, I know.
The paranormal community, unfortunately, you know, as I know we're both a part of, but unfortunately, we're our own worst enemies.
Yeah.
Not you and me, our own worst enemies, but you know what I mean. The community,
yeah, the community
as a whole,
at large. Yeah, it's
right.
Focused
and
on fame and
it is. I mean,
image.
I think for the most part, a lot of these people have lost. Well, okay. Let me say, I think a lot of the people that are involved in the field have either never had the true motivation in the first place.
Right.
In other words, they watch these shows on TV and they think, oh, cool, I'm going to be a ghost hunter and get my own TV show and not work for a plumbing company anymore, right? Or,
da, da, da.
Right, or they've lost sight of it along the way. They've started with good intentions and, you know, they've really been interested in finding answers to things, but somehow on the journey they've gotten sidetracked.
Yeah.
And it's very, very unfortunate. I mean, you see this every single day. If you look on Facebook, you see all these groups that start up and then disband almost on a daily basis. And there's so much drama and so much crap in the paranormal field. Tim, I know we've talked about that on other shows, so we're not going to belabor the obvious on that. But I think it really speaks to the point of the closed-mindedness of the community as a whole.
Yeah. And the image thing. I mean, it's getting really sickening where everybody has to have a publicity picture where they look like thugs.
They have their arms
crossed. They're all leaning back with their arms
crossed in front of you. Yep.
The girls
you
are all turned to the side, you know, and pushing their cleavage together. It's like, come on.
Right.
Do any of you have a clue what you are doing? You all look
That's
pretty. You all look good. Do you know what the hell you're doing? And the answer is no.
Right.
I saw one the other day. I meant to forward you this picture, Marie, because it's awesome. It's these two dudes assuming the gangsta pose, and it's a paranormal group. I won't say where. It was in the Midwest.
You just said
they're doing the gangsta pose. You know, they've got their arms crossed, and they're looking all, you know, bowed up and cheesy and stuff, and they've got grills in.
Oh, my God.
They do not.
Yeah,
their mouths open, they're not smiling, but you can really clearly see that they both have grills, and I'm thinking, gangster paranormal.
Yep.
Is this
or they're
cool?
getting a theme song, or they've got their line of products.
Yeah, they have a logo. They've done anything.
Yeah.
You know.
And
you know what, Murray? Maybe we're missing out. Maybe we should do that.
But yeah, well, we probably would make more money, but I don't want to stoop that low. I'm sorry. I do have a little.
You don't want a gold grill? But we're talking a gold grill.
You know what, Larry? We bust our asses to do what we're doing, and
well, you guys are going to be around, and you know these people. These are Johnny Come Latelys that are here to, you know. Why they're still hanging on to this ghost thing is beyond me. But
it's frustrating.
Would you, Murray? Would you think less of me if I got a grill?
I would think that you were a jackass if you got a grill.
Oh, man. That's the last thing I want to do. I don't want to come off as some douche. I just want to look like a cool gangsta paranormal guy.
Then you know what you need to do, Larry? Larry, you need to take the middle part of your hair at the top and put some gel in it and make it stick up so you look like a duck. That's what you need to do.
All right, I'm going to try that tomorrow. We'll see if that works.
No, I mean, really, we talk about this a lot. We're very frustrated.
I'm happy to talk about it because, you know, I'm more than happy to share my opinions on this. And I'm in agreement with you guys. It's ridiculous.
And it's not getting any better. And I think that's one of the reasons why we're feeling like, you know what, let's just keep moving forward at light speed. And whoever keeps up, keeps up. Whoever doesn't, screw them.
Right. Now, at the risk of... Well, I guess I was going to say one thing, and then I sort of contradicted myself in my mind before I said it. So, but at the risk of pigeonholing one sort of genre, do you think this is mostly the ghost hunting? And then I was sort of coming up with that, I also remembered how, you know, how ornery I got at the conspiracy people about 2-6 weeks ago when Osama bin Laden was captured or killed or whatever, and they all freaked out.
Yeah, they're crazy, too.
Yeah, and they had their own thing going on.
I don't see it as much in the UFO field. I'm sure it's there.
Hell no. If you look at MUFON, look at an organization like that, you've got a governing body. They have controls in place. They have a methodology. That group has matured exponentially in the however many years it's been in existence. And, you know, you have this large body that basically sets the standards for how they investigate stuff. Well, in the paranormal field, we have no such beast. There's been lots and lots of talk about creating these consortiums of sort and these unifying organizations. But the plain and simple fact is, it's an awesome idea. If the paranormal field had some controls in place, in other words, if there was some sort of a governing body that created standards for data analysis and for simple management of the group, and you know how to analyze data, things like that.
Right.
It's an awesome idea, but the simple fact is, it'll never happen.
Okay.
There's way too many egos in the field. There's, you know, a lot of these people, it's mom and pop. They're on a shoestring budget. They don't have the money to spend on the types of standardized equipment that this, you know, governing body would tell you that you need to be able to use. And people aren't going to do it. And you know, a lot of the groups that I come in contact with, this is not a research endeavor for them. This is very much a
hobby,
a social event.
Yeah,
I mean, for lack of a better term, I mean, it's a way to go out on Saturday night, have a shitload of fun, and come home scared. You know,
that's
just a way that they can. That's how they get off on a Saturday night. And you can't relate with a group like that. You can't try to put controls on an organization like that because it's not even in the same.
Their motivation is different.
Absolutely.
And Larry and I wrote an article for TAP magazine a while back on the addictive nature of ghost hunting. Because, you know, you get that cortisol and the adrenaline going.
Yeah.
It actually does become addictive. It's like gambling. So you have a lot of people that just, you know, I saw something on Facebook a couple of days ago. Oh, my God, we don't have an investigation plan for this weekend. Oh, my God, what am I going to do? It's like, you know, get a life. That's what you're going to do. And it just tripped me out. It's like, oh, man, if I ever get like that, shoot me. But it is. I mean, for a lot of people, this is social. It's fun. And that's okay. But do not present yourself as being serious and scientific. Say the truth. We are a social group. We love to go out and ghost hunt. We have a blast, you know, but we're not that serious about it.
Right, exactly. You know, the guys playing down the park, you know, playing a game of pickup basketball, they're not, you know, they're not in the NBA. So.
Yeah.
Exactly.
You know, another thing, too, Larry, why this probably doesn't happen in the UFO field is because the immediacy of the experience is gone.
Right.
So, right, when you go investigate a UFO report, it's already happened.
Sure.
Whereas you go on a ghost hunt and something might actually happen while you're there. So it's a whole different ball game.
Right, right. We're talking about almost like a phenomenon in a way, which is the you know, the social part of what you're saying.
The idea that maybe something will happen tonight at this location. Whereas in MUFON, you know, we went out days after the sighting sometimes, and you just interview people and you look for physical traces, but the immediacy is not there, and I think that's what gets people hooked.
Yeah, I think so too.
By the way, Tim, Larry and I met for the first time ever in Atlanta last weekend.
Wow, that was the first time you guys ever met?
First time ever.
Wow.
Yeah.
Should have got that grill, Larry.
I know, really.
Biggest
right?
douchebag.
No.
No, it was a blast. It was such a blast. Awesome. It really was.
Wow. Actually,
it was definitely a very seminal trip. I learned a lot. I learned that guys can actually have tramp stamps, too. So.
Huh? Are you serious?
What is that all about, Larry? I don't. First of all, how do you discover that?
Well, there was a dude that was obviously, and I'm not trying to insult any of your homosexual listeners, but there was a guy that was obviously very gay that was walking around the conference with a very, very short, like a belly shirt, like you'd see on a female.
Well,
this was a guy, but he had a tramp stamp, a dude.
Wow.
Oh man,
did you not see that guy, Marie?
I didn't see him.
Yeah. I think he was running around with the well-known psychic's entourage.
Oh,
was there.
Okay. Yeah.
Jesus.
No, we had a good time. It was a good conference.
Yeah, it was really, pretty awesome.
Really?
Did
good
you know
time.
That, Tim? Did you know guys actually get tramp stamps?
No, this is news to me. This is news
totally
to me.
Yeah, it totally was to me, too.
Well, guys,
maybe
it's a tramp.
Atlanta phenomena.
He's a male tramp.
Well, I've not seen it in Arkansas. Maybe that is specifically an Atlanta type thing.
He's a mamp, a male tramp.
Yeah,
I don't think that's something that really pops up much in Arkansas, I'm guessing.
No, I didn't see that. I missed that.
Yeah. Well, you missed out on that one.
Larry, you're...
No, it was an awesome conference. We got to meet for the first time. We presented an amazing presentation. An amazing two-hour presentation.
Now, what was this? Let's talk about this. Now, I feel bad, because I mean, the new book, Trinity, it's amazing, but I haven't talked to you guys in a year.
I
and
know,
there's tons
yeah,
of
we got a lot of catching up to do.
As I said before the show started, you got a lot of fucking shit going on here. And
let's get a banner that says that. Larry Flaxman, Marie Jones, Pair Explorers, they've got a lot of fucking shit going on.
Yeah.
I like
be,
it.
That's going to be
I
our
like
motto.
Now, yeah, I'm serious though. You guys, I went to the website. You have tons going on there. So let's sort of we'll probably go back to Trinity one more time. But where can folks get it? Obviously, Amazon, Barnes and Noble, all that stuff, right?
Everywhere
right.
Books are sold. It is a real book. It is not a self-published book.
That's
another thing that's bothering me lately is every idiot's got a book out, and you know,
like, yeah,
you really need to write a book about the ghosts of.
Yeah.
Tuscaloosa.
Arkansas. Yeah.
Right.
I'm an author.
Oh, really? Who's your publisher? Well, I'm self-published. Oh, good for you.
Kinko's. Kinko's is my publisher.
Yeah.
Well, that's partially, you know, why I don't have any books yet. I'm waiting for the good book deal.
You know what? It's not that every self-published book is bad.
No, not at all.
What happens is you're oversaturating the market with crap, so that it gets really, really hard to identify the good self-published books. And
right.
In a lot of cases, if you can't get a traditional publisher, it probably wasn't worth
publishing
in the first. I mean, it's different for fiction. That's a whole different ballgame. But, you know, with these paranormal books, I've seen some that look pretty decent, and I've seen some that look like, you know, they stapled construction paper together.
Oh, you're talking about like even the actual construction of it.
Yeah. The
right,
construction.
Right. Yeah, because I mean, I'm sure there's some excellent self-published books out there. We don't mean
there
to like diss on
are.
People, but at the same time, it goes back to what we're saying about standards, and you know, we don't want to be like the police of the paranormal. It's like I stand firmly against that whole thing. But at the same time, I wish sort of like there was a little more. The idea of, I guess, you know, consumers vote with their dollar or you know,
right.
People
yeah,
who are interested vote with their time of investment.
Right.
Yeah, it's, you know, the bar has been lowered so much in this field that, you know, everybody's got a book out. Everybody's got a CD or a DVD of their investigation of, you know, the warehouse down the street last night. And it's like, you know what? How do we take anything seriously when we're just throwing every damn thing out there? It's I don't know. It's frustrating to me because I think that oversaturation of material, how are people who really have an interest in this field going to find the good stuff when they're just overwhelmed with crap?
Well, here's an interesting sort of point, and I know Larry – obviously, Larry, I'm sure, you know, now that you're this highfalutin author and you know, paranormal celebrity, that you don't have as much time as you'd like to devote to the ghost hunts and stuff. But I know that you used to dabble in that realm. So
yeah, no, I still do.
Okay. Okay.
Yeah.
I was trying to put you over as some kind of highfalutin celebrity, Larry. You're not helping me here.
Oh, well, no.
No, Tim.
I eat pork rinds, remember?
What's that?
Remember, I eat pork rinds.
Yeah, he's a pork rind-eating para-celeb.
but I felt for a while that sort of the UFO field has reached this level of, I guess you could say, scientific inquiry saturation. You know, this is nothing, we can't go any further with this anymore.
Yeah,
and I feel like,
true.
I'm wondering, you know, why hasn't the ghost field reached that level yet? Because no matter, I guess maybe it's this deeply personal thing. Like if you and your two friends go out and you do a ghost hunt, then, you know, that EVP is your EVP, you know. It's better than all the other ones. But at the same time, it's like across the board, if you couldn't have asked for a better – I wish the UFO phenomenon had this kind of popularity in a sense, because maybe then we'd crack the case open, because if you think about it, there must be hundreds of people out there every weekend – to get ghost evidence, and it's been going on for 5 to 6 years at least, and they have come up with squadoosh. Nothing.
But you know why, Tim? I'll tell you why. It's because the people in the ghost field, all they give a damn about is evidence and data. They don't take it to the next step except for people like us. In the UFO field, you have a lot of people who are really trying to put the science to the phenomenon, but you get to a certain point where you just, you know, you run out of theories because we can't prove anything, but they're still trying. I do not see that same thing going on in the ghost hunting field. Nobody is working on theories except for people who are on the perimeter like us.
All right, well, I'm going to turn my rant mode on for just a minute.
Nice. Fire it up.
Here's another issue that I have, and this pisses me off endlessly. There are all these groups that are out there that claim to be scientific. You know, that they approach things from a scientific perspective. And as a person that runs an organization that truly does approach things as much as possible, and of course it's impossible to do it 100% strictly because you don't have control over every variable like you really should.
Right.
But we do as close as physically possible.
Right.
It pisses me off that there's all these groups that are out there saying we are a scientific based research organization. And then you start asking, well, tell me a little bit about your methodology. How do you attempt to control the environment? What exactly are you studying? How are you analyzing this data? And you get these blank, dumb stares. You know, these are people that are talking about having this scientific background that don't have a college degree, more than likely, and they sure as hell don't have any kind of a science background. Even, you know, chemistry 101 or physics 101 is, you know, way beyond them. I speak at a lot of conferences. Marie does too, but I speak at a lot of conferences, and I can't tell you how many times I've gone to a conference and I've spoken about ghost hunting from a scientific perspective. And, you know, we talked about earlier how one of the things that I think differentiates Marie and my ability from everyone else out there is that we're able to take these very complex topics and make them very simple to digest and understand.
Absolutely.
I go to these conferences and I try to talk about the science of ghost hunting from a physics perspective, but making it as easy as possible for these people to understand it. And I look out into the audience, Tim, and I swear to God, I see blank stares. I see people that are just, you know, they're tapping their fingers, they're looking straight ahead, they're, you know, people falling asleep. And it's not because I'm a boring speaker. It's because they don't know what the hell I'm talking about. But yet they're in a scientific group.
Larry, didn't you tell me that somebody once said to you that they were scientific because they had equipment? Are you the one who told me that?
Yeah,
so
I did.
That's the criteria for being scientific.
I went out and bought a $49 K2 meter off eBay, so by God, my group is
scientific
now.
Right, that's the criteria. And it's like, wait a second, you know, do you have a clue what you're doing?
No, here's the second part of my rant, too. Beyond these groups that have no scientific clue whatsoever, you also have the same type of mindset of folks that have absolutely no understanding whatsoever of environmental dynamics. They're looking for very specific things using very specific specialized equipment. Let's take the EMF meter, for instance. You see every ghost hunter on TV carrying around an EMF meter, right? The thing goes off and they all freak out because there's a ghost right there that's about to manifest. No, it is not. First of all, an EMF meter was designed, the purpose of an EMF meter was for basically two things. It was to detect stray radiation from microwaves, and it was also more primarily designed for electrical functions, looking for ungrounded breaker boxes, looking for electrical wiring anomalies, things like that. What makes you think that a ghost is a is a 60 hertz entity. You know, a 110 volt AC line, an EMF meter is going to pick up. Why do you think that that has anything to do with what a ghost or spirit or whatever it is,
right,
is? So they're using these pieces of equipment incorrectly, but more importantly, they're using the wrong pieces of equipment. We, I think, and Marie and May have written very extensively about this, I think we're looking in the wrong place, and that's something that ghost hunters have just not gotten. They just, you know, they've completely embraced what they've seen on TV. They've just not gotten it through their heads that, you know what, guys, we've been doing this for, well, hell, we've been doing this since the 1860s, basically since the birth of the spiritualist movement. So we've been doing this for well over 100 years now, 150 years of paranormal research. And, Tim, like you said, we don't have, what did you say? You had the word douche in there.
Squadouche.
Yeah, we have squadouche to show for it. You know, that to me would signal a very bright beacon that we're either doing something wrong or we're looking in the wrong place. You know, maybe we're using all these great pieces of technology. We're using all these, we have these great ideas of how to analyze data, but you know what? We're looking in the wrong place at the wrong thing. We're going to get the wrong answers.
Well, then what do you suggest? Where is the right place to look then?
What is the one thing, I'm asking you this, Tim.
Okay.
On every paranormal event, every single paranormal phenomena that's ever been reported from the beginning of time, go all the way back to the beginning of time when the first ghost was seen, back to caveman days.
Okay.
What is the one thing that's present in every single one of those encounters? Every one of those encounters.
One common denominator.
The witness?
Absolutely. Yeah. You, as the observer.
Mm-hmm.
That is not being studied in the paranormal field. And the groups that are studying it are studying a very, 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 very limited subset of that.
Right.
We play a very integral role in the manifestation of these things, or the perceived manifestation of these things. How many groups do you know of that are actually doing any type of EEG research on their investigators during an investigation? How many groups do you know that are actually studying dopamine levels in the brain during a paranormal event, or studying things that are actually happening physiologically to us when these events are supposedly occurring? None. There's very few groups out there, with the exception of mine and maybe one or two other groups, that are doing anything like that. That's why there's no answers. We're looking in the wrong place. People are looking for an external phenomena, and I'm not saying that ghosts may not be some type of an external phenomena, but we're focusing 100% on checking for stray AC voltage and things when,
right,
you know, the thing that's much, much more blatant and much, much more obvious, we're not even paying attention to whatsoever.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I mean, thankfully I've heard that sort of perspective growing in recent years. So it's not like this hasn't been lost on the more, you know, progressive thinkers in the world of paranormal.
Right.
I'm not even talking about, like, I'm talking more. I hear that from people in the UFO community than the. I try not to even get involved with the ghost community. They're gross. Like Jersey Shore, you know. Like I feel like they're like all like people from the Jersey Shore.
Yeah, exactly. It's like a big reality show, you know.
Right, right. Like they're all out at dance clubs or something after they go out ghost hunting, or they're just too young.
The real world.
Crazy for me. Yeah.
The real world paranormal. Yeah, but you know, go ahead.
No, I was just gonna say, Tim, did you see that they ghost hunters had the real Housewives of whatever on one of their shows?
That was ridiculous.
Oh, God. See, you know, I mean,
they had them as guest investigators on one of their shows. I mean, really?
Well, in a way, I feel like it in a way, too, it's sort of, I kind of laugh in a sense that they have, like, the celebrity ghost story show now, because now it's like, haha, you silly weekend ghost hunters, they've taken it away from you. You're not even important enough with your ghost stories anymore. Now the celebrities are taking it.
Right.
Ghostbusters, what do you want?
You're listening to Banal of America Audio.
You have been a participant in the biggest interdimensional cross-rip since the Tunguska blast of 1909.
Felt great.
We'd like to get a sample of your brain tissue.
Okay.